Hello and welcome to the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast, the second edition. This is your host, Scott, the anesthesia resident. All right, thanks for tuning in to episode 7 of the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast. So today I'm going to talk about the general tips and tricks for doing neuro cases, especially or any other procedure that requires proning a patient and flipping them from bed to the OR table. So right now I'm wrapping up my neuro month. So I started off sucking really bad at neuro cases, especially during the flip, to sucking less now as I'm wrapping up the month. But I've learned a few things during my time during neuro cases, and I hope to share it with you in this episode. So to give you a brief outline of this episode, I'm going to first talk about the setup, like before the patient gets to the OR. Next, I'll go over the order of things. So what to do from before induction to induction and between the induction phase to the flipping, and what to do after the flip. And lastly, I'll talk about my regimen for emergence. So like with the other episodes, if you could kindly do the pre-survey, which consists of one question, I would highly appreciate that. And with all of that said, let's go ahead and get started. So the first section we're going to talk about is the setup. So basically, setting up the case for a neurosurgery unfortunately takes a good amount of time compared to a regular case, say for example a lap chole or something. So first of all, induction meds, usually the standard stuff. So propofol, you have your lidocaine, and for some cases or whatever you're attending once, things like a syringe for succinylcholine. If you do like a pretty much like a modified rapid sequence induction, considering that most of these cases you'd be doing neuromonitoring. I also have a syringe out for remifentanil as well, because you can use it during induction, and if you're using Mayfield pins to pin the head, this is also a really great drug to have to blunt the sympathetic response to the pinning and to kind of prevent them from, you know, moving or reacting to the pins. Okay, next, the airway equipment. Usually you can get away with standard equipment, so like your Mac or Miller blade, the standard ET tube. But if the patient is in the C-collar, it's probably a good idea to get a GlideScope or some other video laryngoscopy. Next is the TEVA setup. So at my institution, we usually use a combination of remifentanil as well as propofol, and we have a phenylephrine drip ready to go in case the patient gets hypotensive. The way I do it is I have these three main drips connected to a crow's foot. I'm not sure if this is popular anywhere else outside of my hospital, but essentially, it's just like three lure locks that combine into one port. And then that pretty much simplifies it. So all three drips go through one, I guess, exit. And then from there, I actually use like a microbore tubing. The reason for this is the microbore tubing is one, pretty long. It's like 72 inches. So then like you can reach to the end of the table if you really wanted to. And two, throughout the entire tube, there's only about 1.2 cc's throughout the entire thing. So you don't have to push that much fluid to get through the entire tubing and eventually get to the patient. And the other advantage of using this microtubing is you only have one piece of tubing that runs your TEVA and goes to the patient. So then it pretty much cleans up your lines. You're not having a bunch of lines of drips going towards the patient, and then trying to untangle it afterwards is super annoying versus just using this single micro bore tubing to carry your TiVa just makes everything so much easier. And then your lines are so much more organized. So at least for me, it is. So going back to the drips we have for the propofol, usually, you know, it kind of depends on the patient. They're big, we kind of go more. If they're smaller, we go less. But generally, I start between 100 to 125 mics per kg per minute. And for Remy, I usually start at 0.1. And for phenylephrine, I usually start at 25 mics per minute. And this formula, I see, it seems to work relatively well. And then once you get the TiVa started, you can kind of just titrate down or titrate up accordingly. But this seems to be a good middle ground in my experience so far. Okay. Regarding the types of fluids you want to prepare, if it's a spine case, then I would usually have a bag of LR with primary tubing as well as extension to serve as my carrier. If it's a cranny, usually I just go NS all the way just to kind of prevent the possible cerebral edema that could happen with lots of LR. And of course, for the hotline, I use normal saline in case we have to give blood products. And I usually use the LR as my carrier and my NS through the hotline as my push line, because I'm able to pretty much bolus medications quickly with my hotline. Okay, last is the A line. So obviously you're going to need to have everything set up. So the A line monitor with the pressure bag and the cable, make sure you have all of that in the room before the patient comes back. Just makes things a little bit easier. I usually set up my A line kit. So I open everything sterilely and cover it sterilely. So when the time comes, all I have to do is just lift off the sterile drape and I'm able to do the A-line. And one thing I recommend is either have the ultrasound in the room or call for it early. So you have that imaging modality to help you out with placing the line. But we'll talk about that a little bit more later. All right, so next is the order of doing stuff. So you push the patient into the room, you click anesthesia start, and from there you have the period between clicking that button and induction. So usually this is when we start putting on monitors and any IVs if the patient doesn't have like a carrier fluid already. So if I had the option, I can request that the patient or that the pre-op nurses place a right-sided IV, and that's where I'll connect my carrier fluids and then my TiVa. And the reason for this is I like to connect my TiVa and carrier fluids to the right side. So even during the flip, they're able to continue running the TiVa, because things on the right side, when you flip, you basically, the right side is the fulcrum, so it's not going to move as much as the left side. Left side is a huge arc, which your IVs and anything that's on that side could potentially fall out. But the risk is reduced if everything's on the right side. So yeah, so if I had the option, ask the pre-op nurse to put the IV in the right side, connect your carrier and TiVa to that side so you can run it continuously. And depending on your attending, some attendings are okay if you start the TiVa before they come into the room. And this is if you know that the attending is walking over. So just get a head start by starting your TiVa. So usually like the probe and the Remy. Okay, after you connect your line, the next thing you're going to do is connect your monitors, right? So if the patient is going to be prone, what I do is I have the patient sit up a little bit if they're able to, then I place the EKGs directly onto the back. Then I'm mindful of where I put it to in case, like, just to make sure I'm not in their, the field for the surgery. And the reason why I put it on the back is it reduces the amount of work you have to do later. Because if you put the EKG leads on the chest, and then after induction and everything, you won't have to take all that stuff out. And because like you can't have EKG leads anteriorly because you're going to be prone, and that's going to cause a different pressure on the skin, then that's not great. And you have to take it off again and put the EKG leads on the back anyways. So to reduce the amount of work you have to do, just put the EKG leads on the back. And generally, I like to do 5 leads for these surgeries. So just try to put the 5 on the back. Okay. Regarding the BP cuff, depending on if the arms are going to be tucked or not. If the arms are tucked, so both arms are going to be at the patient's side, I pretty much put the blood pressure cuff upside down so that the tubing goes towards the head. So that way, when I connect the cable, it won't get kinked when they tuck the patient, and it won't give in. It will give me more accurate blood pressure. Otherwise, like if it's kinked and it's tucked, and then it's almost impossible to kind of fix it later. Another option that you could do, one of my attendings told me, is you can put bilateral blood pressure cuffs and get 2 cables ready. So if one craps out, you can use the other. I haven't done that too much, but that's definitely an option. But if the patient's arm is not tucked, for example, they're going to be in a Superman position, it's okay to have the patient or have the blood pressure on the normal way with the tube facing caudad. Okay, post-ox, usually I just have on the same side of whatever the initial IV is, ideally on the right side. So when they flip, I don't really have to take it off. Next is a temperature probe. Especially when you're flipping, I highly recommend using a esophageal probe as opposed to a nasal one, mainly because the esophageal probe kind of stays put and doesn't fall out. Okay, and that's mainly for if you are proning a patient. If, say, for example, you're doing an anterior approach and then the surgeon requests rotating the bed 180 degrees, what I usually do is I connect the monitors in a way that reflects the final position. So basically have all the cables come from like the feet towards the head, and I have it all on the same side. So all the EKG leads coming up on the patient, the blood pressure stuff coming up, and as well as the post-ox, all, say for example, on the right side. So when I rotate, it all will just lie where it's supposed to be. Sometimes it works beautifully. Sometimes the cables get caught. So I don't know, just play around with it. But idea is just to set up your monitors in this final position and have it all on the same side. So when you rotate, it kind of just sits perfectly. Okay, so that was what to do before induction. Now there's this critical part from induction to flipping. So you induce, you toss it in the tube, sure, awesome. Say if you're proning, you're going to tie the tube towards the right of the patient. And usually at this point, I would get an extension for the ET tube just so it's a little bit longer and then you're able to grab it more easily when you flip. But that's kind of personal preference. And you're going to need an A-line as well as a second IV after you induce. But a lot of my colleagues, what they generally do is they go straight to the arterial line, which kind of makes sense because it does take a little bit longer to get the A-line. But what I would recommend is you, after you induce and put it in the tube, get the second IV first. One, the reason why I do this is it's a lot faster, at least for me, to put in a peripheral IV versus an A-line. Because usually once the SIVO gets on board, the veins dilate and you see good veins on the other side. And then on the left hand or something, then boom, just put in an IV, connect your hotline that there or not, depending on you, but you have an IV that's ready for you to connect your push line if you need it. And the other reason for this, especially if you're putting in an IV in the left side, is during this particular period, the scrub nurses would put in the Foley. And usually they have to be on the right side of the patient. So if you do your IV on the left side, then they can do their Foley at the same time you're doing the IV. And then depending on which side you want to do the A-line, you can switch afterwards. Okay, so you got the tube in, you place the IV on the left side. Now it's time to place the arterial line. The first thing I do is pray and cross my fingers, because it can either be an easy A-line, I get a first stick, or I don't get it at all. So it's never in between. It's just one or the other. So cross your fingers. I'm kind of kidding, but not really. Just cross them. And when you place the A-line, I recommend to place it on the right side if possible. Mainly because, like we talked about earlier, if you have it on the right side, there's less movement because the right side acts as the fulcrum when during the flip. So there's less chance of the A-line from getting pulled out versus the left side. So if you can, that's what I recommend. But sometimes the left hand would have the better pulse and better access for A-line. So it's ideal if you get a right-sided A-line, but it's not necessary. And one thing I also recommend that I keep forgetting is once you're prepping the wrists for the A-line, just bring your transducer closer to you as well and kind of just put it in between the patient's fingers. So by the time you get flash, you thread the needle, it looks great. You can just quickly grab the tubing and connect it to your catheter. And this is a way you can, you know, do things by yourself, because sometimes you don't have help. So you don't have anyone handing you the A-line tubing and whatnot. Okay. So after you grab your tubing, you prepped, you put on your sterile towels. What I recommend at this point is if you have like a anesthesia tech or someone to help you, to start prepping the ultrasound while you try to do the A-line with palpation. Like if you get it on the first few tries, then awesome, then you're done. But sometimes, you know, A-lines could be difficult and finicky. So after maybe one or two pokes, so you don't get it, the ultrasound be ready. So then you just grab it. And hopefully with the ultrasound, you would get the A-line. So, you know, you're giving yourself a chance to do it by palpation, but you're expediting the process by having the ultrasound ready to go after a few attempts at palpation. Okay. Now, once you get the line in, good job. It's very rewarding when you do it, especially when you have a run of not gaining A-lines. So secured well. It's just to prevent that sucker from getting out. Okay, so this is probably the hardest part of the setup for neuro procedures in prone position. This is the flip. So in my experience so far, the easiest thing you can do is disconnect most of your stuff. So anything on the left side, especially, if you don't need it, disconnect it. So like if your A-line is there, then obviously leave it. But things like the blood pressure cable or like Posox or something like that, just disconnect it for the flip. Because the last thing you want is for, you know, the patient to flip, all your wires get tangled, your lines get pulled out, it's a mess. So if you can, disconnect whatever you're comfortable with disconnecting. Things on the right side, as we discussed before, can generally stay, but things I usually keep connected are the TEVA line as well as the A line. Anything else, I'll just disconnect it. So like a tip for monitors, the EKG, usually at the center, you're able to disconnect the leads themselves from the cable. So I just disconnect that and keep the cable wrapped around like that bar thing where you bag mask the patient. So I just keep it all the cables and stuff on that bar. So I know exactly where all the monitors are and I know where to grab them when I want to reconnect. So again, the EKG thing at the middle, disconnect it, keep the cable on the bar, blood pressure cable, disconnect, keep on the bar, and post-ox too, if you're post-ox cable, if you're disconnecting that. The next part kind of depends on whether the surgery team is using pins, like the Mayfield pins, or you're just flipping onto this table. I think it's called a Jackson table. So we'll start off by talking about the Mayfield pins. So if you ever seen it before, or you can Google image search this, it's like this medieval torture device looking thing, because the pins they use is super sharp. It's literally a pin. And then to secure it, they put onto the patient and they twist that sucker until it's nice and tight. So as you would imagine, it's a very stimulating part of the setup. So one thing I recommend is to tell the neurosurgery team to warn you in advance when they're going to pin. So it gives you time to push a medication. So things like remifentanil bolus or propolis or something to prevent the patient from like bucking and waking up and moving around. Because again, that thing is like this medieval torture device, I swear. Okay. And usually if they are securing a pin, then the neurosurgery team is going to be the one to count off the flip. So they're going to count the 1, 2, 3 turn. And your job in that particular instance is to make sure your lines and airway is intact. And when they flip, one guy or gal is going to hold the head up and another person is going to put on the rest of the securing device thing at the bed. And then you're just going to have to like work around them to secure to put on your monitors and put on your lines. Okay. So if they're not using a Mayfield pin, for example, in lumbar surgeries, where you're just using the pillow, generally you would use a prone view pillow and hopefully you tape the tube to the patient's right, because usually those prone views, they have like this hole on the, right side. That you can fit the tube through. And then if you use the esophageal probe, I would also place the connection wire out the same direction as the ET tube, because it will be easier to access when you flip. So again, you have the esophageal probe, you have the ET tube, put it through the hole, and there's like a T slit in the pillow. So the T crossbar section is for the eyes. Just make sure the eyes are fit comfortably there. It's not like pressing on the globe or anything like that. And when you hold it, you have, what I do is right hand on top of the pillow and my left hand to hold to cup the head. And then when I count off 1, 2, 3, I kind of rotate. So rotating so that my right hand, which was originally on top, then becomes at the bottom, and vice versa for my left hand. And again, nice and slow, nice and controlled. No need to rush it. That is preparation for the flip. We'll talk about the actual flipping portion. So first, make sure everyone is in position and they're ready to go. So this is when you disconnect your ET tube. And again, if they use Mayfield pins, the surgery team will count off the flip. If they use just a pillow, you're counting off 1, 2, 3, flip, nice, controlled fashion so the patient gets prone. And the first order of business is to reconnect the ET tube, because you want to make sure the patient's breathing, right? And especially since we're changing position, it's a really good idea to listen to the lungs, make sure that you're still getting bilateral breath sounds, because it's possible that the tube got displaced during the flip. So again, right after the flip, reconnect the tube, listen to the airways to make sure that it's still in place. If that's good, awesome. Next thing, connect your lines and check your lines. Make if you kept your carrier Teva line on the right side, make sure that it's still running. Make sure that the IV is not infiltrated or anything like that. Because the last thing you want is so you're running the case and then your line for Teva just stops working and you don't have any other option. So make sure at this point that your line is working and connect your push line as well during this time. And once your lines are working, you verify that and it looks great, connect your monitors. And usually you kind of follow in this order. Connect your pulse ox, then the EKG, the blood pressure cuff. And then once all that's done, like kind of just take a look at the vitals and address any issues with the hemodynamics. And this process should be relatively quick, especially if you left your cables on that bar thing or somewhere that's easily accessible. Now, once you connect to your monitors, check the patient's face. Make sure there's no pressure in the eyes, there's no pressure anywhere else, and also make sure that the tube is not kinked. And then those are like the most important things after the flip. Reconnecting the ET tube, connecting your lights, making sure they work, and reconnecting all of your monitors and checking the patient positioning. The next part, kind of like what I do, is sometimes your airway circuit is kind of just floppy around. So I just use a rubber tourniquet for IVs. So you kind of just lightly tie it to the frame of the bed just so it's nice and secured versus like flopping around, because I don't want the tube moving at all. Regarding the arterial line, make sure your A-line still works and positioning the monitor correctly. So like make sure it's in line with the phlebostatic axis or the level of the tragus if the head's elevated so you can get accurate blood pressures. Next, I would check to make sure the bear hugger blanket is on, because I hate it when I forget to put on the bear hugger and have to climb under the drapes, and that's such a pain in the butt. So make sure the blanket, usually I just put on the lower extremities and I connect the bear hugger. So when they drape, I just turn it on. Next, all you have to do is, assuming everything else is great, just give your pre-incision medications, sort of your antibiotics, Decadron, IV Tylenol, mannitol if the surgeons ask for it, Keppra, all that stuff. After that, by the time all that stuff is done, most likely the drapes are coming your way, so secure that. And then after that, you just pat yourself on the back for a job well done. It's a bigger setup than like, you know, the regular routine cases. So good job for getting it done. Okay, so the last thing we're going to talk about is the emergence. As a disclaimer, I am not 100% done with this yet, or not 100% great at this yet, but I'll just describe to you my routine and hopefully, you know, you get some ideas, maybe try it out and kind of go from there. Okay, towards the end of the procedure, usually the neurosurgery team will tell you that they're done with neuromonitoring and you could use your gas. So when I get the okay to go for that, I turn my SIVO to 1.5% and run my flows at 2 liters. And I either completely turn off my propofol drip or I could just turn it down to a very low dose, like 25 mics per kilo. And this is to kind of account for the context sensitive half-life, because again, these cases generally run pretty long. So these patients are probably on these drips for like a few hours. So the earlier you titrate off your propofol, the better. That being said, I keep my remifentanil at whatever rate I had them on previously, because once I turn off, it comes off within like a minute or so. So you have that routine on, and then the surgery team is closing, and then they're done. So I find that the flip from prone to supine, back to the bed is a lot easier for some reason. But anyways, so like before, try to simplify any lines that you could. If there's a line or any monitors that you don't necessarily need immediately, just disconnect it to make your life easier. And before the flip, I turn off my gas completely and go up on my flows to like 10 to 15. But I keep my remifentanil drip going. And if I had any propofol left, I can turn it off at that point. So again, same deal. You're holding the head, your nice controlled flip back, and hopefully everything is great. And pretty much same thing. Reconnect the monitor, same method as you did, because you want to know all your vitals during emergence. And then I would titrate my remifentanil down to 0.05 mics per kg per hour to have like a remi wake up. Some of my attendings just tell me to turn it completely off. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And then make sure the patient's breathing well on their own. If they're great, extubate. Hey, that rhymed. Awesome. And that's pretty much it. That's my routine for neuro cases from start to end. I hope that helped, because it's, as I said before, it's like a pretty big case and lots of moving parts. But once you do more of it and you get into a routine, you know what to expect, things will get a little bit smoother. Okay, this is a good time to pause the audio and do the post survey with the description in with the link in the description. All right, I'll continue giving you fun facts for this episode as well. And this one is, did you know that a shark is the only known fish that can blink with both eyes? All right, guys, thanks for listening to this podcast. If you like to get updates on new episodes or connect with me, I have my social media stuff in the links in the description of this episode. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, website, all that stuff is available for you to connect with me. And with all that said, I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.